Become a water warrior. Water is life. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, water justice. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
What up, thirst trap?
I wondered how many water jokes you're going to try to fit into this episode.
Yeah. Quench me, thirst trap. You make me thirsty AF.
Oh, God. Not already. I haven't even gotten through the podcast yet before you're making me crack up. So today we're going to focus on water justice, and I have a question for you.
Fire away.
Do you like water?
I do like its wetness and liquidity. Okay. I would say it's a bit bland in terms of taste.
It is.
I do appreciate its necessity for survival.
Yes.
So maybe I'd give it like an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 since it's like not, it's like critical for sustaining life, right?
True, true.
So I love water. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love taking showers. I could just stand in the shower for a very long time, which I don't do because I'm concerned about the environment and how much water I'm using, water consumption. Yeah. But anyway, I love being in it and I love drinking it. Mm-hmm. But I like sparkling water more.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm a Spindrift specifically fan. Mm-hmm.
Waterloo is my brand of preference. Waterloo. Well,
this is TMI, but water, those kinds of sparkling water brands cause me to burp too much.
Oh, too much like bubbly.
Too much bubbly.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I really like water. However, I am afraid to drink what comes out of my tap.
Oh.
Yes. First, my water is very hard. Mm-hmm. The scale it leaves in like my shower and stuff is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I have 2 Brita filters. Mm-hmm. I still drink it after filtering it, but I kind of question whether or not I should be drinking it sometimes since my house was built in 1955. And I'm not entirely sure there's not lead pipes.
Could be. And I mean, the water in the area is really hard anyway. Before I moved, like, you know, you could see like the crust when your ice cubes melted in the glass.
Oh, gross.
But I have a water softening system in the house now.
Yes,
so,
you do.
That is a nice improvement.
I probably need one of those.
But so, I didn't even think about when you asked the question. Yeah. I was thinking about water as like drinking. But yes, I love being in the water or near the water.
Yes.
The ocean, lake, rivers, beaches, creeks.
All the above.
Ponds, tributaries.
Streams,
inlets,
waterfalls.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Okay. I knew I had to throw that in there.
You got
to
throw some songs in.
Yeah,
I only have one, and we'll see if you figure out where it is.
Okay.
So Ben, tell us why is water so important? We've kind of alluded to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've both already indicated that water is necessary, vital for survival. So we can last about 3 days without water.
Yes.
Then we're dead.
Yeah. That's not very long when you think about it.
Right. And I mean, that's on average. So it could be, you know, depending on like your health level and environmental conditions, it could be more or less. But average 3 days you can live without water. And we're also made up of water. For example, newborn babies are made up of about 75% of water. Yeah. And that kind of decreases over the lifespan. But there's an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Of course there is.
Yeah, in the terrible first season.
Oh, okay.
Like the first season's real. It's when they still wear like the spandex uniforms. It's really bad. But anyway, they encounter this like crystal life form instead of carbon. And it like, you know, hacks and it like breaks into the computer and is talking to him through the computer, and it calls like the humans like ugly bags of mostly water.
Okay, well, so, that's a good description of us.
Yeah, that is a good
description. Or babies.
Ugly bags of mostly water. Yeah, especially babies.
Yes. So a lot of what I'm going to talk about today comes from a 2018 edited book titled Water Justice, imagine that, the topic of our conversation.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And I'll provide a link in the show notes because it's an open access book. But they define water justice as being based on principles of fairness, equity, participation, and justice. So some other fun facts. 70 is a reoccurring mm-hmm. percentage here. Babies mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the earth. 70% of the earth is covered with water, but only 2.5% of the earth's water is fresh water. Gotcha. And that is used mostly for agriculture, then industry, lastly, mm-hmm. municipal and domestic use. So there are numerous competing demands over these available water sources. Yeah. And so it makes sense that it's contested and fought over.
Yeah.
So while some people, including ourselves, have plentiful and easy access to water, over a billion people globally do not. Mm-hmm. According to the WHO, which we've said before is what?
Water Health Organization.
World.
Okay.
WHO. Yes.
So I got water on the brain.
Yes. There are over 500,000 annual water-related deaths. This is due to contamination and waterborne diseases mm-hmm. and 1,000 deaths per day of children under the age of 5.
Yeah. Kind of makes you feel a little ungrateful.
Yes.
We're talking about those particles in our water a few moments ago.
Yeah. And I think about that every time mm-hmm. I take a 10-minute shower because yeah. I try to limit them to 5 minutes. So many Americans probably do remember the Flint water crisis, which came to the public's attention in 2016, mm-hmm. but had happened, started actually in 2014. Contaminated water, it was contaminated with lead, yeah. and it led to an outbreak. So they said that like approximately 14,000 children were exposed mm-hmm. to high levels of lead. And there's lots of deleterious effects of that, yeah. which I'll talk about a little bit later. But it also led to an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease because that mm. is a waterborne disease. Now, they haven't directly tied it to that, but yeah. everyone mm. is pretty sure that's where it came from. And that did result in 12 deaths.
Oh, gosh.
And then 2 people died later. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of a, you know, a local case and a very famous mm-hmm. one that I think Americans would yeah. remember. And as we're recording this, Hurricane Helene has devastated Asheville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Other parts of Western North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee were hit hard with too much water. So mm-hmm. too much water can be a bad thing.
Right.
Due to the hurricane and the increase in the severity of flooding was something we discussed in the climate justice episode as a consequence of climate change.
Right.
So climate change also makes the human-made water problems worse. When we discuss water justice, however, or water injustice, mm-hmm. there are a cluster of issues to consider. So do you want to highlight some of those for our listeners?
Sure, but backing up a bit, you're talking about Helene, and it is, you know, terrible thinking about all the people without power.
Yes.
And it's a bit vain, but like I think about how awful it would be to be without water for a week because I wouldn't be able to shower. Or take a bath.
Yeah.
And
that's,
I'm, you know.
That's privilege,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, before, you know, this morning I was reading the subreddit mm-hmm. and people were asking, they were completely unprepared. So it never occurred to them to like fill up their bathtubs with mm-hmm. water, which is people who grow up in hurricane yeah. prone areas know to do that.
Mm-hmm.
In case you lose water, you fill up mm-hmm. your tub. And they didn't know to do that. Mm-hmm. So that allowed them to flush toilets and take showers. But
yeah.
it's mm-hmm. showers you'll miss and not actual drinking water.
Yeah, showers and baths for sure. I'm like a two a day kind of guy.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I can't imagine going a week without a shower.
Like yeah.
Would, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so access to water is one of the primary concerns of water justice, given that since as a resource, it is limited. You mentioned there's, you know, only a very small percentage of fresh water.
Right.
And many times that small limited amount of fresh water is contaminated.
Yes.
So with increased population, we have rising demand coupled with limited availability, and that can, you know, create conflicts between
right.
water users and businesses who are competing for groundwater sources.
Yes.
And of course, businesses and industries can also contribute to contaminating water.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And as we discussed before, as with most justice issues, water deprivation, insecurity affects marginalized and poor communities the most,
right.
while also impacting food sovereignty, as we discussed in the episode on food sovereignty.
Yes, these are absolutely connected, right? Water and food.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start by saying that water scarcity and insecurity have less to do with what scholars call absolute availability to mm-hmm. fresh and clean water, and more to do with how water and water services are unequally distributed among societal yeah. groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's plenty of water to go around, but
yes.
it's the way that you know, people with money and power and land use, control, hoard,
right.
distribute, pollute, contaminate that water.
It's very complicated. Everybody wants it.
And so how is that? How is this happening? How are businesses contributing?
Oh, wait a minute. I got my line here that I have to say. Because it's perfect for this. it's from a poem, which some listeners might know. Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Which was perfect based on what you just said, right? So it kind of alludes to, despite being surrounded by something, you're not benefiting from it, right? So it's tied to this idea that water scarcity is not because there's not enough available fresh water. It's just how it's distributed.
That was, you actually just stole my spin.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, that was going to be my spin.
Oh my gosh,
but
I'm
hey,
so sorry.
No, it's a good enough quote that we can have it twice.
We totally can. Besides, just, some people just check out at this point. Maybe they'll come back in later. So you're asking about how businesses are contributing to the problem.
Right.
So transnational agribusiness. Now wrap your head around that. We talked about transnational before, right? What is transnational? That's crossing borders.
Yep.
Agribusiness. Mm-hmm. So these are businesses that are doing farming where they're export. So it's not, they're not growing the crops in their country. They're growing them in a different country. And those are being exported to even other countries, right? So this is all crossing borders. So this is one example. As the world is experiencing an increase in the export of flowers, fruits, and vegetables. These agribusinesses buy up the land, mostly in the global south, because they need the water access to run the business, farming, right? You need you need water to farm. So a land grab is essentially a water grab.
And as you can imagine, got farms this big,
yes,
you definitely got to use a lot of water to keep them
water.
Yeah.
Lots
unnatural,
of water.
Unnatural,
So this leads to competition with locals. It degrades their ecosystems and jeopardizes their own food sovereignty. Scholars refer to this as hydro-colonialism because you have these outside powers, countries coming in, buying up this land in collusion with the government, and then using it for stuff that they're actually going to send out. So the locals are not benefiting at all. And so they're just occupying the land and displacing people. So rather than it just being a global north, global south issue, another example here is like Asian companies bought up more than 8 billion hectares, which I don't really know what a hectare is. I just imagine it's a lot. I can't visualize a hectare, but
it's
a lot.
I bet it's bigger than an acre.
A lot bigger than an acre. Oh yeah, Case is going to kill us. The geographer is like, you don't know what a hectare is?
Yeah.
8 billion hectares. We know that's a lot. In the Nile Basin for export crops that require more water than is actually there in the basin. So it's complicated because some of the countries along the basin need that income from these Asian companies. And what happens is they're forced to evict residents so they can make those sales. So there are also extractive industries contributing to the problem. For example, in many parts of the world, mining companies use headwater catchment to get the water. And this diverts pollution downstream to local peasant and indigenous communities and their water sources. This also leads to conflicts because locals are like, hey, don't do that.
Don't pollute our drinking water.
Don't
man.
Pollute our water because water's life. So please don't do that. So in
and
20,
usually they're very receptive to those kinds of pleas.
Oh yes, absolutely. So I'm just going to call out Canada here. You know, I feel like we definitely criticize the US a lot because obviously we're here and we know more about it, but we're going to call out our neighbors to the north. How about that?
Yeah, the time we bust that cheery, nice stereotype of nice Canadian neighbors,
Diane. In 2014, the Inter-American Human Rights Commission, or the IAHRC, investigated 22 Canadian mining projects in 9 Latin American countries and found that all of them contaminated rivers, displaced and impoverished people, dispossessed water rights, and caused profound environmental impacts. Protesters have also been killed. And not only that, in addition to doing all that, Canada promotes cooperation by advising those governments on how to get around their own protective laws and how to curtail the civil rights of their citizens.
Gosh.
Thanks, Canada.
Yeah, I remember in our fast fashion episode watching that documentary on like leather tanning factories in India and how it like polluted the water, and it was like 40% or maybe even more than that, like a huge number of kids in that area had cancer.
Yes.
Yeah, so sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, aren't like businesses starting to like be better, build hydropower? Seems like a good green earth-friendly approach. Seems right. like it would like help communities with access issues.
Yes. And it's, you know, like it's people advocate mm-hmm. green energy and hydropower is that, right? Mm-hmm. So no.
Oh.
Yeah. The problem with hydropower is that these mega dam projects and mm-hmm. other types of hydropower developments are presented as part of a green economy and they're designated as clean developments.
Those damn projects.
Oh God, you did it again. We won't cut this part out. We'll leave this part in, but you just caused me to laugh uncontrollably by just making a weird face. And then we have to now cut that part out of the podcast.
Sorry.
Okay, let's keep it moving.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about alternative sources of power a bit in the climate justice episode. So basically what you're saying is that these alternatives can have devastating effects yes. as well. Largely based on kind of like how they're implemented and how they impact local communities.
Right. And again, the governments are colluding with the big mega projects over smaller, more context specific ones. So one example here is the construction of a dam in Guatemala, which required the displacement of the Achimaya indigenous population. And I apologize if that's Achimaya. Mm-hmm. I could not find online the mm-hmm. way to say that appropriately. So a propaganda campaign was started and it helped sway opinion by presenting them as a backward people unwilling to embrace change and that they had no rights to the land.
That sounds familiar.
Sounds very
familiar. Heard that about 20 yeah. different times before.
Yeah. So the land was also, okay, so even though they made the argument that they had no rights to the land, they also said the land is empty. It's an empty space. There's no one here. Mm. Even though in their own project documentation, they noted that there were people who were resisting displacement. If you displace somebody, that means they're there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these communities peacefully resisted displacement, which ended up resulting, unfortunately, in state-sponsored military violence. 440 men, women, and children died, and thousands of families were displaced. And this is just one of many examples.
Gosh.
So we discussed this before in our conversation about environmental justice, that decision-making is not equally distributed as well. And those most affected often have the least say in how water policies are determined.
Right.
So in struggles for water justice, scholars have identified four key overlapping issues, with the first being basic access to and use of water-related resources, as we've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also conflict over the contents and rule of rights, which refers to how the rights are allocated mm-hmm. or how the rules and laws on water distribution. Again, this is back to distributive justice.
Gotcha.
The third area is the authority and legitimacy to make and enforce those rights and rules. So who gets to make them mm-hmm. and do we have to follow them, right? Mm-hmm. Who's deciding this? And then lastly is discourses or how problems are defined and by whom. So the propaganda campaign is a perfect example of this, mm-hmm. like saying that this indigenous population is backward, they don't want to move, yeah. and they don't have any rights to the land. So they're mm-hmm. controlling the narrative
mm-hmm.
and that's how they sway popular opinion.
So what do we do about this? What are the proposed solutions to these water issue problems?
Yeah. So water problems cannot be resolved through technical solutions alone, but require broader recognition that they are inherently ecological, political, and social issues simultaneously. Unfortunately, like most justice issues, there are no easy solutions to a global water crisis.
Yeah.
Scholars and activists take a grassroots approach to water justice by engaging lots of groups. And we've talked about this on a global level, but urban, rural communities have issues as well, including contamination mm-hmm. and sanitation.
Yeah.
So maybe I haven't mentioned this before, but, you know, my mother lives in a county that is in a constant boil water advisory. Mm-hmm. So no one there drinks the tap water at all ever because mm-hmm. it's just constant. It almost never lifts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never safe to drink the water. You just assume that it's all contaminated.
Is that from industry?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think the reports are accurate enough to be able to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So it never says, it's just like, boil water advisory for the county with no other details whatsoever. And again, it's almost constant. It might be lifted and then it goes into effect again. So you take this as don't ever drink the water. Yeah. And so a lot of the local churches give out bottled water already constantly, you know, with even without a flooding emergency or something like that.
Which then there's another problem like plastic pollution.
Plastic pollution, right. Mm-hmm. So models have been proposed that acknowledge water ecospace is a geolocal public good, right? We can call it glocal, but it's geolocal public good.
Glocal.
Glocal. Well, I like that. So, but access and allocation of rights, responsibilities, and risks should be undertaken in a socially just manner, and that there are certain people, groups, communities, states, intergovernmental entities that should be responsible for doing this. Mm-hmm. Water justice is entangled with economics and politics.
Yeah.
So water justice activists and scholars have also advocated and mobilized around important concerns, democratizing water governance, you know, kind of recognizing equity issues, struggles, and social injustice. Mm-hmm. They've also promoted ideals for water ethics to be, which cracks me up, like basically telling all of these people who make decisions about water, you should be more ethical. And you know, they provide principles that guide positive actions. So it has to be context specific solutions, like the Flint water crisis. You know, the issue was contaminated water, lead. They changed the drinking source, but then you have to also get rid of the lead plumbing. So it has to fit what's going on in that situation. In the U.S., nonprofit American Rivers provides a water justice toolkit, which is a guide to address environmental inequities in frontline communities. And it gives legal resources to support, encourage, and engage community leaders who are experiencing environmental injustice. So if you want to start or supplement your own efforts, this toolkit helps you do that.
Oh, nice.
So I loved that one scholar said, we all need to become water warriors. And so to relate this to one of our recent episodes, if you could give a water warrior a superhero costume, what would that look like?
Oh man, that's a good question. Well, I would say since it's water, it would have to be blue.
Yes.
And pretty skimpy, like a bathing suit.
What?
So, like either way, whether it's a female or a male superhero, like a bikini or bikini bottoms, like, you know, coming out of the water. Some like water superheroes are barefoot, but I don't like feet or dirty feet or barefoot. So we need probably like some
booties.
Yeah. Some knee high boots.
Yeah.
A nice skimpy blue bikini.
Okay.
Like WW, Water Warrior, tattooed. Some either like
on the chest.
Yeah, if it's a man, like tattooed on the chest.
Yeah.
Or a woman, maybe on like the back shoulders or something. I also like orange or yellow with maybe like orange or yellow hair.
Oh.
Or like a maybe an orange like mask paint around the eyes.
Yeah, those are complementary colors. Yeah. Remember that from elementary school?
Mm-hmm. And that's Water Warrior.
I was thinking Storm kind of looks like she could be a water warrior.
Yeah.
You know, as a character.
Yeah, the silver hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But rain. She does look kind of more like thunder and lightning.
Yeah. Water Warrior, maybe you can have a sidekick.
Yes.
Liquid Lad.
It's Liquid Lad.
Yeah. So Water Warrior, the Adventures of Water Warrior and Liquid Lad.
Oh, that's very cute. Oh,
I thought it kind of sounded dirty, but anyway.
Oh, well, no. I thought
you got anything
cute.
Else?
No. No, I yeah, do.
Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding. There was normally I don't, right?
Yeah, right.
There was an article in the Guardian newspaper at the end of August reporting on a scientist and PFAS. So for our listeners who are not familiar with them, PFAS are, quote, forever chemicals, or they're a class of about 15,000 chemicals often used to make products that are resistant to water, stains, and heat. The chemicals are in everything. They're ubiquitous, and even at very low levels of exposure have been linked to cancer, thyroid disease, kidney dysfunction, birth defects, autoimmune diseases, and other serious health problems.
Yikes.
They contaminate the drinking water of at least 200 million Americans. Now, how many Americans do we have in the country? Do you know what the estimated population is right now?
700 million.
Oh, God, no. It's above 300 million. Oh, but okay. The point is that, like, that's a lot.
Yeah,
it's really close.
Yeah, exactly. That's two-thirds.
So thousands of polluters, industrial polluters, have been identified who profit from these PFAS. There is similar widespread contamination in Europe.
Well, I went with seven because we said seven was like the
number of the
theme of the day. And also there's like 7 billion people or something on the planet. Like,
yes.
So anyway, seven was in my mind, but I was way overestimating that.
That's okay. Hopefully we never get to that number. So what happened is that investigative journalist for The Guardian reviewed documents that showed there's this, more collusion, but scientists with financial ties to industry and histories of producing controversial research are trying to derail chemical regulations. Mm-hmm. They're mobilizing right now on these new federal drinking water limits for toxic PFAS. Mm-hmm. So in July, over the summer, Michael Dorson, a contentious toxicologist, their words, not mine, contentious toxicologist, he receives funding from chemical makers, and he sent an email to scientists, consultants, and lawyers detailing a plan to develop and publish peer-reviewed science for chemical companies to wield as evidence against PFA's limits. It went out just after industry groups mounted a legal challenge to the restrictions. Mm-hmm. So he's basically sending out an email requesting funding so I can make up, well, he'll probably actually do it, but it will be falsified peer-reviewed research to challenge these new regulations. So the plans, according to former EPA risk assessment manager Maria Doa, the plans were not a valid approach to science.
Invalid.
Yeah. Rather, they're a legal strategy out of the industry playbook for undoing regulations, following like big tobacco and other industries that are doing this.
Well, don't hate the player, hate the game. I mean, speaking of water, like I'm trying to build a pool right now. So if there's anybody out there that needs some science for hire, just let me know.
No, we cannot be bought.
That is true. We are water warriors without a price. That was just a joke. I really wouldn't sell myself.
Well, your pool might be built by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they're trying to undermine the EPA's science and make it sound like there's uncertainty where there is not. Like there's already consensus about this in the scientific community on toxic levels of PFAS, which is why the regulations are now more strict. But they've, like the EPA amassed hundreds of animal and epidemiological studies before issuing its new rules in April. This particular scientist has been accused by both Senate Democrats and Republicans for running a, quote, science for sale nonprofit. Which is exactly what you were talking about. So you need to ramp it up. We just recently discussed the ethical use of research and our responsibilities as researchers in my research methods class.
Gotcha.
And so that's why I wanted to bring this up, because it's kind of an egregious example of someone who's using their privileged position as a scientist for personal profit.
Sure.
And there's a whole cottage industry for scientists who want to make money, quote, producing scientific uncertainty when none exists, as happens with climate change.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, I can imagine where that comes into play.
Yeah. So anyway, Dorson claps back, stating that his NGO is completely neutral and objective. But I say, Dorson, cry me a river.
Yeah, we need more rivers. We need more water.
That's a song title. You missed it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Justin Timberlake,
yes, cry me a river. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to, I told you to you see where mine was going to come in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so our last thing.
That's what my mom used to say to us all the time.
Cry
me
a river.
Way before Justin Timberlake, when we would complain about something, she'd be like, just cry me a river.
Yes. Okay, one more thing. Remember, you know, like I'm still on this kick here. I'm on my soapbox here. Mm-hmm. Let us not forget that it's industry pushing back against these regulations. One of the responsibilities of government is to provide us with a common good, of which access to safe drinking water is one. In a systematic review of all available science, the EPA found virtually no level of PFOA or PFOS, which is two types of the most common PFAS compounds. It's really hard to say. Mm-hmm. PFAS is how people usually say it. But anyway, no level of these is safe in drinking water.
And 2/3 of Americans have some level in their drinking water.
Okay, finally done with that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked them. anything else?
No, I think.
Final answer?
I think I've final pretty answer. Much covered everything.
All right, well, then that means let's spin it. It's our minute to spin it, where we give our takeaway from the show. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
Well, this one will definitely be shorter. Clean, safe water affects everyone and is critical to survival, social progress, and ecological sustainability. The United Nations outlines sustainable development goals for global development, and number 6 is dedicated to water. So they have the goal of universal and equitable access to safe and affordable drinking water by the year 2030. Become a water warrior. Water is life.
Nice.
Ancient proverb. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, I was going to say water everywhere, but not a drop to
drink.
But
I stole it. Oh, yeah. No. Mm-hmm. I totally threw you off by stealing your spin.
Well, that's okay. I mean, there's another thing that I was thinking about that kind of goes on what we talked about. So in the New Testament, there's a passage where Jesus is saying to his disciples, I was hungry and you fed me, and I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. And his disciples said, well, when did we do this? when did we do this? And Jesus said, like, when you do any of these things to the least of my people, you're doing it to me.
Yeah.
And so I think that goes along with what we talked about, like, you know, underprivileged, lack of access to water. We're taking away water from thirsty people, and there's no excuse for it when there's right. enough water for everyone to drink and enough food for everyone to drink. We have to do better.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.